10 or 15% of what everybody is working on should be their stretch, should be something that isn't easy or great for them. But almost everything that we do should be focused on growth. So, you know, back to the beginning of the conversation, the whole team needs the simple message that if it's not growth, don't do it. I mean, there are, of course, some maintenance things we have to do. But when you're picking among what feel like too many priorities or two things you should do, like pick the growth. So it's really making sure the team is focused on growth and then their own personal growth through that stretch assignment. So it's like business growth and personal growth. And we try to keep those simple, you know, cuts so that you're not giving people too much to focus on.
We're back for another episode of the Powerhouse Podcast. I am Clayton Collins, your host and the CEO at Housing Wire. Today's guest is Liz Gehringer, the president and CEO of Anywhere Franchise Brands. Liz has a huge job for leading growth, marketing, and operations across Coldwell Banker affiliates, Coldwell Banker Commercial, Better Homes and Gardens Real Estate, Century 21, and ERA. This is a really interesting conversation where Liz and I have the chance to compare notes as executives and learn more about her path to leadership, how she helps other managers and leaders grow, and how she thinks about continually taking opportunities to stretch herself professionally and help the people that she leads continue to take on new responsibilities and grow as leaders and professionals. This episode of Powerhouse truly focuses on our core for this podcast: business growth, leadership, and operational strategy. I hope you enjoy and learn from this episode with Liz Gehringer, the president and CEO of Anywhere Franchise Brands. Liz, thank you for joining me for an episode of Powerhouse.
I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
I'm excited that you're able to make time for the show. I think your plate is pretty full leading Anywhere Franchise Brands, not just one team or one group of executives or one brand to lead forward. You have a full portfolio. Give us a little glimpse into what life is like leading franchise brands at Anywhere.
Well, it is interesting. It is a very full plate. I've definitely learned what to take off the plate. You know, it's almost like, what are those overcooked veggies or something I'm not touching? you know, I have responsibility for our franchise brands. So those are Coldwell Banker, Century 21, Better Homes and Gardens, ERA. And I also have responsibility for marketing across the entire organization, as well as events and execution. So it's a busy bit of work, but I think it's really important to challenge yourself just when you're getting comfortable in a role. And our company is very good at that, is very good at finding the next, you know, mountain to climb for us, so to speak. So I'm getting my arms around it.
What has that meant for you and your career? Like kind of always looking for the next challenge inside of the organization. Like what have been some of the challenges that you've either grabbed or been handed?
So I worked here as a lawyer for a long time. And I actually started my career in the automotive business. I worked for Ford Motor Company. So I started with a sort of a consumer-facing role, so to speak. I was very focused on cars, something that I loved, and like delivery of something that consumers really related to, something I had grown up loving. And I was in sales and marketing. I went to law school, and that's something I had always intended to do. But I had been drawn to the work I was doing. So I became really fascinated with small businesses, the way they were powered by franchises. So the way car dealers became big, mm-hmm. powerful companies through the Ford Motor Company organization. And I saw that opportunity in real estate. So while I first got into litigation, I sort of had my eye on getting back to some of those roots. And I've been able to do that here. So while I was a lawyer for the company, I was still working on this model of delivery in real estate, much of which happens through franchises. So small businesses who are really out there running the brokerages, and how our company, this company, helps power them to do that, you know, with tools and planning and brand especially. So I was able to find my way through law and back again to the things that attracted me into the real business of real estate. And you asked how I did it. You know, I asked to take on more responsibility. Once I got comfortable with something, I asked if I could take it from another angle. And the company, especially our CEO, Ryan Schneider, was incredible about talking about what that really could look like. You know, like, what skills do you have? What did you do that you loved? Where do you think you could add value? How do you think you could help the business grow? And we talked through those things, and that took me over into the business side. So it's really come full circle, but I've definitely been involved in the asking and seeking new responsibility.
Yeah, that's the asking and seeking, I think, is so critical. And every organization responds differently in terms of, like, do they empower people to reach before they're ready and, like, kind of take on a challenge that you know, they haven't, like, faced before. There's a higher probability of failure. And other organizations that often, like, kind of wait until, you know, someone's, like, fully prepared, which as a employee or executive might often feel too late. How would you describe, like, how Ryan at the time and, like, the organization today, like, pushes people to reach for something they're not quite ready for, or think they're, you know, a completely new responsibility versus something where there's a higher probability of success?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there are a couple of different kinds of roles usually. Most companies have generalists and specialists, broadly speaking, right? And so if you are heading toward leadership, I think it's really important to become a generalist. I mean, you have to be able to tackle so many different issues. You have to be able to grow the team, guide the strategy, you know, guide the operations, and, like, future-proof the organization, which you can do. But it's helpful if you are a generalist, like if you have a lot of capabilities that you've gathered from many different roles along the way. And I think that's part of our philosophy. So we support our experts. We support our expertise in legal, in finance, of course, right? Our real estate experts, our brokerage experts. And those are incredible skills. We couldn't run the company without the expertise. But I think as you're looking to identify leaders and have people grow, it's really important to make sure that you're adding different areas of expertise so that they can ultimately become stronger generalists. And I think that underlies a lot of our philosophy, but we don't just let it sit out there. We of course have an annual process, which we revisit quarterly, checking in with people, identifying our growers, and making sure we get in a room with each other and talk through talent, talk about different team members and what are our talent plans for those people. I mean, it's a very mature and professional process that we use. So I think you have to have real rigor around your approach.
Yeah. So hearing your background, I mean, you crossed the chasm from specialization in sales and marketing in the Ford days and specialization in legal. What was one of the, like, first opportunities where you kind of truly reached into, like, general management, like stepping out of the specialist chasm into a true, like, leadership role?
Really, when I moved over into operations for on the business side is when I really felt it, because I had to almost quiet the specialist parts of what I knew, right? Had to almost quiet the expertise. Yeah. And it's like an interesting experience. Like, you're used to representing one view in a room and you have to take in and become more of a listener. You have to be more of a learner again and sort of quiet your things. I read something about you in LinkedIn when I was thinking about our conversation today. And it said that though you're an expert and you're always going to be in the top few percent of everything that you do, you always manage to be assuming you don't know something. Like, you're always managing to take in information. I thought, like, what a great compliment that is. And it really made me think about it more. But I think I learned that when I moved into operations, right? I couldn't bring my full lawyer self. I couldn't be, like, the authority on certain things or the person who's just there to give expertise. You know, and the best lawyers mostly listen, but still it was an evolution in my own, you know, personal approach. And I felt that quite a bit when I moved into operations.
So was somebody coaching you and, like, guiding, like, hey, like, Liz, it's time to, like, shed the lawyer shell and, like, you know, put on the leader hat? Or were you figuring this out as you went? Like, how did you develop the philosophy on, you know, shedding the specialization, empowering the people around you to truly be, like, better than you at the specialization? Like, what was your process in getting there?
Yeah, I work really closely today with Sue Yannicone, who's an amazing, you know, mentor, and she really helped me get through that. She talked a lot about, like, taking your compliance hat off so that you could put on all the other hats as well and not putting it away, just, like, rotating through the levels of thinking that are required. And she, you know, helps me and guides me today too. I think you sort of might over-index away from your skills at first, and then you bring them back. You know, you don't want to step on the shoes of the other people who are in that role. And I think all of us go through that. If you move into any new leadership role, the person who is in your prior position, even if it's changed a bit, you know, you don't want them to be in your shadow or something, you know, feeling like they have to do it your way, because that's never right. You know, you want them to do it with their best expertise and skills. So, you do have to sort of self-audit. I think you're the person most aware, and you have to do a little bit of self-auditing until you can bring it back in with the confidence that, okay, it's time. People actually are looking to hear all of my perspectives on something. A lot of humility.
Have you found, so like, I'll like from my like executive journey, like I feel like there's also like different stages of a business where I've been more and less comfortable like shedding the specialization and like, and really like empowering the team around you. So like last couple of years, like kind of a tough time in housing. And it, as a leader, I think it forced me, for better or for worse, right? Like forced me to like, all right, rehone the, like the specialist skills, like be more involved in some of the operational like decisions or processes that have previously been relinquished just because of the pressure cooker that like our industry has kind of navigated. Have you found, like, have you been able to resist that temptation or resist that need? Or like, how have you like managed leadership in different cycles?
Such a great question. You know, I think it's really an interesting time because COVID, you know, took us on a certain journey in the real estate market. And at first was very stressful, you know, for so many reasons. Not just health, but business practices, right? And so much adjusting that had to happen. And we all had predicted so much gloom and doom. And then it turned out to be such an active market. So many people relocating, so much migration all throughout the country. And it turned out to be such a positive time in the business, but almost so positive that it took down the level of rigor, right? Like people weren't training, people didn't have to, transactions were happening so quickly. Home buyers and sellers didn't really need as much assistance. Perhaps it was different kind of assistance. It was more like speed, different worry.
You kept that level of rigor up. You probably left opportunity on the table. It was like you had to like, something had to give.
So it's such a great way to think about it. And now we realize that actually was quite a bit of time. There were years in there. So many agents joined and some more experienced agents just stayed the course and kept their practices or didn't forget their practices or how to do them. But I think we ended with a little bit of a training gap. You know, I think we definitely have some agents who don't have the full, the training or maybe all the skills that they would have had if they had the experience of years, pre-COVID years, just because of what they saw and what they did. So it's almost back to a lot more training, getting back in place, you know, making agents understand what they need to do in this particular market, just as you identified. And so there is more expertise and more work, so to speak, or more specific work that needs to be done and different work. So that's sort of where we're pulling everybody's attention back to today's market: training, coaching, and masterminding, so that agents can show their experience to others. You know, agents love to share their experience. So like letting there be teaching within the network is really important.
Okay, so been through that period, and you continue to lead forward. How do the last few years influence how you help people, the leaders kind of behind you, your direct reports who are leading brands like Better Homes and Gardens, like keep kind of reaching as leaders and grabbing new responsibilities?
Well, I've really enjoyed it. It's been really such a shift for me to lead leaders. It's so different from leading managers. You know, leading leaders, you've decided that those are the people you've selected and decided that those are the people to lead the organization. They've got incredible skills, and it's like helping them work the thing that they're so good at. And it's not, you don't really have things to improve upon per se, but it's like, how can you really fire up business growth through their skills? So I think about a brand like ERA, and Alex Vidal, who's leading that brand. He's an incredible leader who comes with quite a bit of background coaching agents himself and recruiting himself from his own brokerage background. So he's turning that into a lot of what he's delivering to the network, like bringing to that franchise network his own skill set, delivering of himself as part of the value proposition, which is different than we might see in other brands. And so that's great. So how can I empower him to do that and not worry about, okay, that seems like a lot of his time, or that's so different, or, you know, what about this marketing piece we want to do? Like freeing him up and identifying his strength to be incredible, which he is. Each brand has just so much different opportunity within it. So like Better Homes and Gardens comes with this incredible brand, right? The publication, the brand that people know.
It was just a few weeks ago. We were like enjoying like a quiet Saturday morning, at, like having coffee at home. And I look over my daughter, like my 4-year-old daughter is like, got a Better Homes and Gardens, like open up, like flipping through pictures. Like you can't read yet, but here you are like, it like attractive. Immersed in this brand. I sent that picture to Ginger and she
you
loved
did.
It.
So, yeah. Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. I think there's so much power in that brand and she's a marketer with incredible background. So she's making that connection stronger. Working at some digital delivery into that connection. So they each, you know, leader has strength and it's important to support that strength. You know, I think sometimes our instinct is to, you know, go in the direction that we're used to seeing or whatever it is, but it's like actually helping the person be the great at their best thing.
At HousingWire, we're obsessed with data and analytics. Without good insight, there's no shot at operational excellence or innovation. Mortgage lenders that want to thrive in today's market must have access to due diligence and valuation intel, risk management tools, and predictive analytics. And they have to cover everything from the asset to the enterprise. This is exactly what Consolidated Analytics does. If you want to make more informed decisions and optimize performance, you have to check out Consolidated Analytics. Visit consolidatedanalytics.com to start your journey toward more informed decision making. Yeah. Okay. So you have the leader, you're leading leaders, and like now those leaders have teams of people who want more and they want to grow. So like I'm kind of going through like the organizational strategy and talking about how do these concepts of empowering people to grow professionally, whether that's growing their teams, growing more agents or gaining more responsibility, like how that flows like deeper in the organization and kind of ultimately getting to the place of like, how do we coach our team members to do the things that you did earlier in your career that really elevated your organization and you professionally?
I think it's really good to encourage people to change positions or to take on stretch assignments, like all those things that just feel a little bit disruptive, but you know, 10 or 15% of what everybody is working on should be their stretch, should be something that isn't easy or great for them, but almost everything that we do should be focused on growth. So, you know, back to the beginning of the conversation, the whole team needs the simple message that if it's not growth, don't do it. I mean, there are, of course, some maintenance things we have to do, but when you're picking among what feel like too many priorities or two things you should do, like pick the growth piece, whether that's helping companies recruit or helping an agent focus on a new expertise, you know, whatever it is, it could be per person productivity. If it's an agent, like how do we make that person more productive? At a franchise level, can we look for an acquisition for that company and help support an acquisition for that company, which we do quite a bit of? And then as a broader network, how do we bring new companies into the fold, you know, get new companies to join us through our programs, so, and our outreach. So it's really making sure the team is focused on growth and then their own personal growth through that stretch assignment. So it's like business growth and personal growth. And we try to keep those simple, you know, cuts so that you're not giving people too much to focus on.
Has it been challenging to get the team to maintain the growth mindset in a period where like sales volume has been down? So like we talked about this growth period in 21, 22, then we've gone through like 23 to kind of to date where volume has been down across the industry. I won't speak specifically to your brands, but kind of across the industry, it's been a challenging market. So like, has it been challenging to have leaders maintain the growth mindset and keep reaching for those growth assignments and stretch opportunities?
I think it's like, you know, it's just framing everything as opportunity. I feel like we do a really good job of hiring optimistic people, skilled people who have the experience of many market cycles. So they're not surprised or confused by the cyclicality of our market or different challenges, right? They're mature leaders. But I think framing everything as an opportunity is just really important. So you could read headlines and think it's a terrible time, or you can sit and reflect for a second that the level of relationships we have with our customers right now actually feel a lot like they did during COVID. So for example, at Anywhere, our family of companies, we feel like we're in such a great position. And I hear that from our customers in that they're very happy about the work we're doing in Washington. They're happy about the legal leadership that we have been able to provide for them. We're doing advocacy work through our agents in DC. Like, those are leadership positions. So when we reflect, actually, while our brokerages and our agents may be having to change up the way they're working, or the volume may be down, you know, it's an opportunity to have strong relationships because we're doing the right things for them. But they also have an opportunity to look even at how we run our own brokerage, for example. So we have a tremendous amount of cost discipline. We're known for that in our company. That is in part designed to inspire them to have the cost discipline, whether they're companies or agents. You know, where are you spending? How, you know, are you paying attention to the things that are auto renewing, all those things you bought? You know, are you looking at your footprint? Do you need the exact office footprint that you have today? So we work to inspire our customers, our franchisees and agents, through our own business practices. So those are all opportunities. And I think it's like a little bit of that mindset. You know, you don't want to be like running in a full sprint all the time. This is a little bit of training time where we can step back and look at our operational excellence.
Let's go deeper on operational excellence. So like, what are some of the areas where you see some of your best agents or best franchise partners focusing right now to prepare themselves and their businesses for growth?
They're the top agents, and they've been good at this, but they're doubling down on it. I mean, it's obviously sphere, right? It's being in touch with your sphere with a level of expertise, for lack of a better word. And we've said it quite a bit, but customers, today's home buyers and sellers are far more educated. So, you know, they're not looking for things they already know. They're looking for the information that you have that they don't have, like a deep understanding of the local market, a deep understanding of the particular inventory that's at issue in the community they'd like to be in, you know, which homes are moving or about to move. I mean, nobody can beat an agent's local expertise. They're looking at investment ideas and looking for purchases for investment purposes. So there's just a whole higher level of information that customers are interested in. And so agents are increasing their level of expertise. So they're increasing their contacts and making sure they're in touch with like good, compelling information with their customers. That's really what's happening right now. And they're trying to make sure, just like in every other business, that the interaction between a home buyer or seller and an agent is that exciting, interesting experience, right? Like, you want that everywhere you go now. You want everything you do to be a great experience. And I think this business grew up trying to have a quiet agent experience. Like, you've seen all those funny videos about, you know, how agents are like running around like crazy behind the scenes, but then they appear completely calm for the customer and like not letting the customer know they did anything. And it's much more about expression now of the work that you're doing, right? It's like much more giving the experience and letting the customer know.
It's like the analogy of a duck, like calm on top of the water, but like feet like paddling really quickly underneath the water. But that analogy doesn't demonstrate value, which is one of the things that we, you know, keep hearing as a priority as we come out of this, you know, March 15th D-Day from last month. Let's tie together demonstrating value. I've heard you on social and other podcasts talk a lot about brand trust. So can you tie together like kind of the brand trust kind of at the anywhere level, and then how that flows into the brands and agents when it comes to demonstrating value? I feel like there's a correlation there.
Yes. So I think real estate, you know, generally has always been about the consumer, right? It's always been about making sure the home buyer or seller is best served and is finding, particularly on the buy side, the community that they're looking for, finding home that they're looking for. And when you talk to agents in the business, they are 100% focused on the person, right? On actually serving that customer. So a lot of the conversations that happen get away from that today, right? In the news or everything that, you know, is getting discussed. But there is this genuine seeking of community. It's a very personal transaction. So home buyers and sellers want to work with somebody they can trust, who they can let into their personal needs and into their family, or, you know, the people that they intend to live with and around and work together closely. So you know, working with a trusted agent has always been at the center of this transaction. And people want to work with a real estate brand that they know and recognize, that has a good reputation. You know, so an agent with a great reputation, a brand with a great reputation. And we've got that in spades here at the company, right? We have all of these well-known and trusted brands. And so, and those include Corcoran and Sotheby's as well. We have a large family of companies here. People have an automatic reaction to our brands, right? The consumers have an automatic reaction when you see our signs on a lawn, you know, when you see our advertising, when you see an agent affiliated with one of our brands, it's like that's meaningful to the person because we've been around for a long time. We've been providing advice and we have a great reputation, which has almost become automatic. We have to keep earning it every day. You know, our agents do that, but it's really important. For me, trust has always been important because I studied business. I studied business management and organizational management. And, you know, I spent all of my college years thinking about how important it was to find and create a place where people wanted to work and people felt connected. And I think that you do your more time with your coworkers than your family often. And how could we develop culture? So that's really why I started my career thinking about it as such importance. And to me, trust, professionalism, you know, that's where you want to work. It's who you want to do business with. It's how you want your work day to go. And, you know, I think it's at the center of how we conduct our business. So it's, to me, it's really everything. It's the cornerstone. If employees know that they work at a place with a good reputation, they proudly conduct themselves that way. And if agents affiliate with brands that they know are trusted and professional, that's, you know, they become that. You know, it's a full reflection. The people become the brand.
How do you think of like the value and impact of having multiple brands on brand trust? And I'll tie the parallel to us. So like at Housing Wire, through acquisition, we've brought together Housing Wire, Real Trends, Reverse Mortgage Daily, Altos Research, and part of the business still runs, as separate like market facing brands for specific users. But like we're investing a lot to like kind of bring everything around Housing Wire and have Housing Wire kind of be the orbital center as a market facing brand, but also a employer brand. And we did spend some time in a more of like a house of brands strategy. And just that was really challenging for us. Like, how do you think of the value of being Coldwell Banker and Better Homes and Gardens and Century 21 and Corcoran, and like how, like why multiple versus putting everything behind like a single parent brand? And do you think of that differently from a consumer and employee perspective?
Yeah, I think it's a really great question. You know, I think we have a family of brands that all have unique identifiers within the brands and a little bit different positioning with consumers. So they have a little bit of a different draw, and there are different market aspects too. So for example, Corcoran and Sotheby's have a primarily luxury focus, while Coldwell Banker, Century 21, Better Homes and Gardens and ERA, they do more of a full cycle of consumer, right? From maybe a first home purchase all the way up through to include luxury. So could be considered more of a mass market, right? Like something for all aspects of the home buying cycle. But the differentiation of the brands can allow for different focus in different areas of the country, for example. And we are a certain number of leaders with a certain amount of capacity. So we can focus on consumers to make sure we're hitting and attracting consumers at, you know, from all aspects. So I think we have a consistency, though, that trust and professionalism is a consistency across the brand. You know, that can attract agents, but also, as you said, employees. And I think our overarching Anywhere brand, which is the family under which we operate, that's really a big part of the employee focus as well. So, you know, obviously Anywhere is driving our strategy and helping us across all brands, but it's really the mothership in terms of employment as well. And it stands for certain values, you know, winning a lot of accolades and that kind of thing for the way we offer our work, which is a remote first setup, and you know, just the way we bring people together through employee resource groups and the culture that we've created. So yeah, I think it's a big market, you know, it's a huge market and it's a huge number of agents and employees. And I think we want to attract and take care of as many of those people as we can.
So So you have like the corporate employees who associate with Anywhere. Like how about the agents? Like, do they like, is there first and foremost like allegiance to the brand they're affiliated with, like ERA versus like the parent entity? And like, what type of interaction do they have with Anywhere as an agent?
They definitely are very much affiliated with their brand, and they have incredible brand pride, and that's, you know, fantastic. And we love that. And yet in a moment like we're in today, when we're working on issues in Washington or legal issues, and we're looking at this NAR settlement, and we're making sure that we have them set up appropriately, right? So we went out, we were the first to make sure we had a settlement in this case, take care of them, get them from being distracted to being able to do what they do, which is deliver their services. In those moments, you know, I think Anywhere definitely resonates with them in a different way. So they know that they're affiliated and they have these protections and the brightest minds and all that, you know, working for them both at Anywhere and within their brand. But there's a ton of brand pride because the brands are run by distinct leadership teams with distinct marketing plans and approaches. And yes, they definitely associate that way. There's some room for masterminding, and sometimes we get people together across brands. Like, we'll showcase top agents and let them hear from each other with idea sharing, that type of thing. And that's been really popular. You know, I think people love their brand, but they also love top performance, right? So there's agents or salespeople, this whole entire organization is about sales. Like, it is a high performing place. So anytime you can showcase approach with people or let them see other top competitors, they absolutely love that.
I see that. I mean, a big part of our audience in the mortgage side, and I see that amongst originators. Like, there's this massive like competitiveness across organizations, and you know, at certain like tiers of origination, like there's the death match between different organizations. But when you truly put like a group of top performers together, it's almost like the some of the like the brand like shield falls off, and like winners recognize winners, and they just want to like talk and learn from each other, and they forget about the competitiveness for a minute.
I absolutely agree with that. Yeah, it is. You know, I think I've said it many times, but the one unique thing about real estate is that we do come together at the closing table, right? Yep. So we'll be sitting side by side with other brands at the closing table. And so from a consumer perspective, it is best when we operate together with the highest ideals. Like, we're not looking for other companies to not be trustworthy or not be professional or not be great at what they do. Like, we really want all brands to be successful in real estate because we will conduct business together nearly every time.
So you talked a little bit earlier about how agents have an opportunity now to build trust and interact directly with the consumer in a market that is a little bit inventory constrained, and like, you know, prices stay high, and it's a challenging time to buy. And in some markets, it's a challenging time to sell. So how, let's go a little deeper on like the changing role of agents. So, and some of the opportunities or challenges that agents face today as kind of they navigate the post-settlement landscape, they deal with questions from consumers they might not feel entirely prepared to answer. Like, give us a glimpse into what agents are facing in 24 and how their roles are changing.
Yeah, I think they're, you know, they may be facing more questions just about how do commissions work. You know, I think it's interesting that for us, we do these transactions all the time, but for home buyers and sellers, they're rarely in them, right? So they get in and they don't really remember from maybe when they bought a house 10 years ago, like, how does the whole thing work? Like, I think agents have to come with that understanding, but they do, you know, like, this is not, that part is not new to them, that the customer isn't doing this transaction frequently. So, you know, what's new is that there's so much outside discussion. So they have to take the time and explain what the benefits could be if you're on the sales side, what, you know, how we are attracting buyers. If you're on the buy side, you know, what you may be expected to pay and what that's going to look like. And a lot of this is still evolving, right? Like, you and I might have a more detailed conversation perhaps in a few months or, you know, several months as we start to see some practices get built out a little bit more. But, you know, I think you have to be able to talk through buyer agency agreements. I think you have to be able to talk just through commission questions generally with confidence, and talk about what the selling agent is doing and what the buying agent is doing. And then more specifically for that client, you know, what's it going to look like? How can you expect me to interact with you? What will you be hearing from me? How do I decide which homes I'm showing you? How do I, you know, go about communicating with you? Just all those things. How would I, and when you're making a decision, when you're talking about an offer, like really explaining why you think this offer is the right offer, or telling the stories of the experiences that you've had on similar transactions. I mean, there's just so much to add. And, you know, I think it's there. The agents know it. It's just like they haven't had to have as much of a conversation. They're just going to have to take their time and explain, and don't feel defensive about it. I mean, we know we're in this business for the sake of the home buyer and seller. Like, this is why we got into the business. You know, we love housing. We love community building. We love what we do. I don't think we should be, you know, worried. I think we should approach it with the candor of, this is why I get in and this is how I operate.
It takes a certain type of communication skill and leadership style to communicate with confidence a message that isn't entirely like defined, or there's still some uncertainty. And I think that's where like the best professionals know how to communicate that something isn't completely black and white defined, like where there's like an area of uncertainty or gray area, whether that's how competitive a market is, what pricing looks like, or what commissions look like, but still do it with confidence and clarity and consistency that I think bring it all back to brand trust, like helps develop like trust and rapport between any client and advisor or agent and home seller or buyer type scenario.
I agree. It's I was talking to Jason Wall yesterday, who's the president of Coldwell Banker, the franchise business, and he was talking about, you know, you're getting requests for information that actually wouldn't be helpful at all. Like some of what people want to know, like really small details on a certain case, and there are many cases going on. It's like, what would that actually help that broker or that agent with today? I mean, I think people are feeling overwhelmed and recognize they maybe need to be students, but it's like they actually are already experts in the thing, in the service and what they provide and how they conduct their business. So, you know, they may not need to become legal experts in like what motion is happening in a certain case or something like that. But there's this feeling of like, I need to know everything. And it's like guiding people back to what they really do need to know. So it's like the things people feel, some of what people feel uncertain about is not actually necessarily the thing that they need today to serve a customer.
How do you get that message across to agents? So like, I mean, and part of, as the leader of the organization, like how do you focus on the things that matter and not get like sucked into granular details of a specific case, especially given your unique ability to do that, given that you do have a legal background, you probably understand this a little bit better than the average leader in our industry.
You know, I think we're doing it through just a lot of communication, and change management is obviously the most important skill, you know, probably of any leader, you know, especially today, right? Change is happening so fast. Every couple of years, there's some dramatic shift going on, it seems, although maybe leaders have always felt this way, that there's some dramatic shift every couple of years. But, you know, it's
housing, right?
Housing, right? I mean, it's housing.
We're in it for life, but it might change every 3 to 4 years.
Yes, it's giving us, you know, some strain. I think it's really just, you know, bringing the really solid, genuine, you know, thinking back to the agents into their own strengths, like reminding them of that. We're doing it through a lot of typical change management mechanisms, right? We have town halls. We have FAQs, we have written I mean, people receive information differently. So you have to do some written things. Yep. You have to do some FAQs. Some people like to hear things as a form of a question. And we're not trying to go too fast or too far, right? I mean, I think if you begin every communication with the understanding that we all have an obligation in this industry to put the consumer first, to make sure that we're giving them fair representation with full disclosure and transparency, you know, if reminding people of the basics. And that's what I did in ethics, right? I made sure we were considered an ethical company so I could remind people of that and we could conduct ourselves that way. And it's like a little bit of a pretty simple thing through this, which is consumer first and transparency. That's the through line. You know, it's like when you're working on annual goals with the team and you say like growth is the through line, right? Like, look at, you're trying to do a lot of stuff, but what are the growth pieces? So I really do believe that the transparency and trust, you know, building that for the consumer, like we know how to do, is the through line to help the agents have the right mindset.
I love the message on like communicating in different channels. It's definitely something we've learned as a media company. And I'll share like to the housing audience, like what we've learned at Housing Wire is we'd love that if every single professional read housingwire.com and subscribed to our newsletters, listened to our podcast and came to the gathering, which is coming up right around the corner on April 21st. But we have segments of the audience who consume information differently. And you have some people who are inbox centric and like they're going to read every newsletter and click through the articles. Other people who listen to Sarah Wheeler's Housing Wire Daily podcast when they jog or walk in the morning. Some people who come to the gathering and are loyal to the like Housing Wire community through that annual event. And everyone consumes a little bit differently. And we have to assume that our team members and employees and clients and home buyers and sellers are really similar. Some of them are getting all their information through podcasts. And I've been kind of critical of like some of the podcasts that have been out there talking about real estate today. So like, let's assume that some of our consumers are getting bad information through podcasts. So like, let's focus on giving them the right information through this one. Sorry, a little bit of a little rant there.
No, I agree with all of that. I think podcasts are fascinating. I mean, I have three children who are in their 20s, well, 19 and 20s. And, you know, they're like a podcast only. I feel like consumers of information, such a great approach. Social is really huge with agents. I definitely feel like that's a great way to reach and communicate with agents. They get a lot of information there, but you know, it's a little bit of all of it. You know, you can't pick one, but I think simplicity of those communications is really important.
The evolving landscape of leadership, communicating through all channels. Liz, thank you so much for joining me today. It's so cool to learn about what you are doing at Anywhere, but also the challenges and opportunities and the growth story in your career as a leader. I learned a ton from you today. Hope the audience did as well.
Likewise, I love this conversation. You're the powerhouse. This was great.
No, the show, the name of the show, Powerhouse, is about you, the guest. So like, don't put this on me. Liz, thank you. We'll do it again.
I look forward to seeing you in person sometime soon.
We'll see you in person soon. Have a great day.